Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I am Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, and I am with Jason Anthony at Boom 62, recording on Thursday night. It's a Tuesday night, actually. It's June the 4th. We're right in the mix of June, about 40% of the season, getting close to that point. Jason, what's going on, man?
What up, Vlad? We did just record on Thursday night, so it feels like I just talked to you, but happy to be back on the mic with you talking some ball. I really liked last week's episode talking about those pitchers in May. It was really eye-opening for me, but good week, good start to the week, other than my Mackenzie Gore start yesterday. It was a little sad way to start the week, but other than that, excited to talk some ball.
Yeah, some of the players that I have invested in that have been kind of slow to come around have been starting to pick it up. So I'm happy about that. Guys like Mason Wynn, who had a combo meal on this Tuesday as we record. Manny Machado is heating up a little bit, and the pitchers are going off, especially one of my teams has Tyler Glasnow and Max Fried. It's actually my auction team, and man, with Crochet and some other good starters there, I'm really happy about that. So hopefully I'm starting to climb, and hopefully Henry Davis can take me back to the promised land here.
Yeah. Does 3 weeks, 4 weeks in AAA change his skill set than how much he's struggling with major league pitching? I picked him up a decent amount in the OCs. I hope it does. But those pitchers in the major leagues are pretty dang good. So hopefully he can start making some contact.
Yeah, he returned on Tuesday and hit eighth. And of course, up against Glasnow, he went 1-for-3, I believe. Got a hit there after Glasnow came out, struck out once. But yeah, hitting eighth there. I actually got a little tip from somebody. It was either on Twitter or the Discord, someone close to the Pirates organization, about how their pitching coach, or their hitting coach, Andy Haynes, is apparently not a very good one, and apparently tweaked his stance. I hadn't really heard anything about this before, but sometime around spring before the season, which obviously is, if true, is horrible timing considering he was one of the hottest hitters alive in the spring. And then we all saw what happened there. And just in general with Henry Davis, I mean, for me, I hope it's just some good fortune, because the way everything shook out last week with a crazy fab run. I had a wild Sunday, kids hanging over me, like trying to update the website with the Sunday update and trying to get all my own bids in. And then an hour beforehand, I see that news about Henry Davis who getting promoted. And this is a week after I had picked him up for just a few bucks and I was ready to drop him, really, because you can only take a zero at catcher for so long. And the previous week, I thought because Joey Bart was going on IL, or possibly going on IL at that point, that Henry Davis might come up. Instead, it was Grant Koch. That experiment did not work out. And so Henry Davis is here. So hope we get something out of him.
Yes, and it's verified Grant Koch was a real baseball player, to my chagrin. But yeah, it's pretty good timing on that. Like you said, if it was an hour or two later, you might have dropped him and just been lamenting it, but now you're kind of doing cartwheels. So that week early ad, like we talked about a couple of episodes ago, there's no better feeling of getting that guy for a couple bucks and then getting called up.
And we're going to talk a little bit about that later on, a topic we touched on a little bit last week, and that is the art of the stash. And of course, it's a dangerous game. There's sometimes the stashes sometimes just start to accumulate, and especially with injuries, you're waiting for somebody to come back, like maybe a stud pitcher. You've got Max Scherzer sitting there, or maybe it's a deep league and you're excited for Chase Silseth, and you just kind of keep holding on, and before you know it, someone else gets hurt, you gotta hold again, and then some ad or prospect becomes available, and it becomes a really tough business because the roster flexibility really is everything. I remember learning this a long time ago from one of the greats, Lindy Hinkleman, the only two-time winner of the NFBC main event. And I just remember he was just never on board with having no coverage at a position. So, even if it was just a somebody like you have a Kevin Newman, and you just have that coverage in case you get an injury midweek and you need to plug some one in on the weekend, because as you know, those things can happen. As a matter of fact, one of his overall championships, he won over KJ Duke in game 163. It was like a Jermaine Dye double in RBI, and that put him on the last day of the, you know, kind of the after the season into the grand championship, won that six-figure prize. I know Scott Jenstad, a lot of other really good players, they do that as well. You get caught in that stash game, you don't have coverage for those midweek guys.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of newcomers to the NFBC, especially in the 15-team leagues, really struggle. It's always this pie in the sky. I'm going to stash three, four guys, and all my guys are going to stay healthy. But there is so much value to roster flexibility, and I've learned the hard way, and it's helped me out a lot, is you really can't afford more than one stash or one injured guy that's not playing, accumulating stats on your bench. Because these guys go out so quickly. And, you know, kind of started during COVID with the red suitcase, and it's just gotten more extreme that you just needed the maximum flexibility. So, you know, just to kind of maximize your stats, because like you said, end of the year, one run might change a lot of money in your bank account, one homer, one stolen base, a hit here, whatever it is, you need to be flexible with that.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later. Let's cover some injury news and notes and just general baseball news. And let's start with Luis Robert Jr. and Royce Lewis coming back with bangs, respectively. Each of them hit a home run coming back after very extended absences. They both came back on Tuesday. You had Luis Robert Jr. hitting one off the Cubs, and that game just short of Shota Imanaga being able to capture five innings. Either way, I believe he gave up four runs, only one earned, so pretty lucky there. But yeah, Luis Robert and Royce Lewis with a bomb there, so great to have them back. Do you have any shares? How excited are you about these guys back?
I have a couple. Byron Buxton, he has not produced yet. I'm hoping he gets hot.
Royce?
I'm sorry. I was looking at last week. Royce Lewis, I actually do not have any shares. I loved him last year. And then Luis Robert, I did not have any shares. I was worried about the White Sox offense, but I'm probably going to have some FOMO on Royce Lewis. The guy is Barry Bonds when he plays. He's hitting, he's stealing, he's homering, but can he stay on the field? Because when he is electric.
We've got a couple other injury list stints. Tommy Pham, we were talking about him this weekend when he kind of, I see you. You just did, I just saw you do the Phil Rivers, you know, the humph. But yeah, this is a wild man. I actually tweeted how, I mean, I think it's pretty well known. Dude is pretty crazy. And yeah, he's looking for a fight. And as a matter of fact, when I kind of tweeted that video and said he was nuts, I actively, purposely, and I'm not a wuss, but I'm also not trying to, you know, get into it really. But I just didn't type his name. I just, you know, posted the video. Call it what you will, but like, you know, this dude reads tweets, and it's not like I'm afraid he's gonna like come to my house or anything. But there's no reason for me to be starting beefs with Tommy Pham. But he's on the IL with an ankle injury. And so is Willier Abreu, who basically fell down the steps going down to the bench.
Yeah, be afraid of Tommy Pham, Vlad. Be very afraid. The funniest tweet I saw was Tommy Pham injured his ankle by putting his foot in his mouth during that press conference after the running into the catcher in that game. But yeah, he is an interesting guy. Talk about taking everything personally. Ask Jock Peterson. But Willier Abreu, it's amazing that, you know, you look at these guys with the cleats and there's not more slipping going up and down stairs. You look in these in the tunnels going up to the locker rooms, they go up and down stairs. It was a little shocking to me going through the Giants clubhouse and seeing how much up and down these guys have to go with these cleats, because you get a little wet, a little slip, and all of a sudden you can roll your ankle pretty bad. And amazing it doesn't happen more, but I guess these guys are the top athletes in the world and they're pretty coordinated, other than Abreu this time going down the stairs. But that one hurts a little bit.
It does. It does. And then speaking of hurts, Kyle Tucker's on crutches. X-ray's negative, but his hurt his shin, and sounds like he's not going to go on the IL. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Dude's on crutches one day and is probably going to be back in a couple of days. He's a beast, man. Isn't he just so fun to watch?
He is, and he's just so consistent. Just basically the, I don't want to say boring, but it's just kind of the ride it in, the 30-30, just 100 RBIs, 100 runs. He is so much fun to have on your fantasy team, and that was a gnarly-looking possible injury. It looked like it got him close to the knee. I remember Jermaine Dye did that way back when he was on the A's. He did it, locked his knee, hit the foul ball off, and broke his leg. So I was a little worried about that when I watched it, but they showed him on crutches. He tried to walk without crutches. He said he can get by, but it doesn't look, I would not guess he'd be playing baseball before the end of the weekend. And I think we'll be lucky if we get him back by then.
The Cleveland Guardians, Bo Naylor is just not doing it. He has been dropped slowly in a lot of 12 team OCs and is now starting to get dropped in 15 teamers, and rightfully so. He's hitting not just below the Mendoza line, but like well below it. And he's only hitting against righties. I'm sorry, playing against righties. And then now he sat on Tuesday against a righty, so he hasn't played in a few days. The Guardians have a bunch of lefties coming up. Could this just end up being a David Fry, Austin Hedges backcourt here in a bit?
Yeah, I mean, why would you play Bo Naylor when you have David Fry? The Babe Ruth of catchers, right?
Yeah, he's incredible.
Bo Naylor is not Josh so far. He's really struggled. He was somebody I was actually interested in draft season. Luckily, I didn't get too much of him, and the places I did, I was able to move on. But I definitely see a demotion in the cards coming up, because David Fry looks like a little sustainable, and they're obviously love Austin Hedges' defense, so really don't need a third catcher that's not playing on that team. So it'll be interesting what comes next. And, you know, these guys really, I feel bad for the younger guys in the major leagues, because it's hard to get out of, it's impossible to get out of a slump unless you're playing every day. But these guys, you know, play one every four games. I don't see it getting better anytime soon.
And the Guardians just are, they're getting it done. They are like about 5-6 games up on the Royals, and, you know, still, the Twins, Tigers are within 10 games of them. I think obviously a lot of people think that, including myself, that the Minnesota Twins, who are quite the deep team, obviously the pitching is stacked. They have an elite closer, very good bullpen, and the hitters, they just mix really well with the lefties and righties. They have a lot of depth, a team that can just send Edward Julian down like that, no problem, and are pretty healthy right now. I mean, that team is really good, but the Guardians are, they're the second best team right now in the American League. You know, they look good. As a matter of fact, if you go to the Statcast park factors, or just any park factor, you'll notice that the, that Progressive Field is I think third or fourth in runs and in home runs. So, And the pitching's good, and Gavin Williams will get back at some point. Hopefully at some point they don't have to have Carlos Carrasco in that rotation. Maybe Tanner Bibee gets his stuff together and becomes more consistent. But the Guardians look like the real deal.
They do, and they've been wrecking some pitchers. So kind of they're not a total avoid, but I'm questioning starting my questionable starter against them. Can we get a moment of silence for our boy Edward Julian? I'm a little sad about that, but it was, I guess, coming, because he had not been playing very well. But, you know, there's nothing to hold the Twins back like our favorite manager, Rocco Baldelli. So they only can go as far as their manager will let him.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a shame. He'll be back at some point. You know, it's funny, in my wildness on Sunday, putting my bids together, I actually ended up picking him up on a team, because I had him on a bit earlier, and, you know, I have like 10 fab teams, and I guess I just forgot to remove him. So I won him for $16 unopposed. I actually needed a middle infielder and missed out on a lot of guys. So stuff happens when you have too many teams.
Shocking. There was no backup bid.
Yeah. Go figure. Some pitchers here to talk about. Horrible news there in Houston. The hits keep coming. And you know, I'm not talking about Lance McCullers. That's ship has long sailed. I don't even know what his status is, but Christian Javier, unfortunately, is going to miss the rest of the season and a good chunk of next year with Tommy John surgery. Jose Urquidy, Urquidy, my goodness, is, I don't know, kind of scared that it might be a similar situation for him. And you know, Verlander's been pretty inconsistent. Looks like they're going to be relying a little bit more on Spencer Arrighetti, who I guess would get hit with like a comebacker, only ended up with like three innings. He'll be fine, but looks like he's going to be in the rotation for a bit.
Yeah, the spaghetti man. I did not see an update after I saw he left the game. I think it was 3 1/3 and was 104 mile an hour ground ball or line drive off his leg. So hopefully he is all right, because his stuff was playing up the last, you know, 4 or 5 starts. He looks like he was getting comfortable in the major leagues. So hopefully there's not much going on there. Rangers are starting to get possible depth coming backs, and Mad Max Scherzer and Tyler Molly starting to throw a little more. I know Scherzer's got that thumb injury. Do we have any more update regarding Max and his thumb?
I think there's no actual timetable yet for him. He is still on the 60-day DL. He did throw a 40-pitch batting practice session on Tuesday. But we'll see. I think it's coming probably sometime end of June, early July is probably my best guess when he's back. He's another one that's kind of tough to you got to hold him. You drafted Max Scherzer. You've been waiting this long at this point. I think it's like a different situation with Kodai Senga. I think Kodai Senga should have been dropped by teams long ago. But even then, like even when Scherzer comes back, Kershaw will be back. Like these, we can't be banking on anything close to what we've had from these guys over the years. I mean, they're much older. They're in the twilight of their careers, and we just don't know if they're going to be any good.
Yeah, the age is not nice to athletes, and it's still undefeated. So these pitchers coming back from injury, there's no guarantee they're going to come back and help you the way that you think of Max Scherzer or any of these older guys coming back would. So Clayton Kershaw, you mentioned. So careful plugging them into your lineup immediately. We'll see what happens to that. Another injury to talk about, Robert Gasser. The coach has some very strange speak. I think it's Pat Murphy's the coach. He said that MRI looked fine, but no updates. So I don't know what's going on with Gasser, but a second elbow issue of the year. So that's a little scary. And that rotation, they got more red X's through their rotation than do healthy bodies, it seems like.
It's rough for them. They are now having openers for Bryce Wilson. He's not really going 5 innings. He's been a tough one. He got rocked in his Monday start. And then even Colin Ray had an opener on Tuesday, pitched a few innings, I think 4, but even he's not, you know, kind of full bore there. There are whispers of a potential trade with the Mets, and that would make a lot of sense. Obviously, the Mets have, you know, they probably would love to get Christian Scott back in there, Jose Buto, they've been stockpiling. So I don't know who would be the one to get moved from the Mets. I don't know if you have any guesses, but I think that would be a good some good trade partner there for them.
Would you like to sign my free Jose Buto petition? So I don't care who it is as long as he's back in the big leagues, because the guy got the short end of the stick. I guess he walked one too many guys, but his stuff is legit and a guy that I am hanging on to where I can.
Yeah, I mean, they're at a point where they really don't have any they don't really have any options. They don't have any true starters. And if Gasser is gassed, the elbow's cooked, then they're in really big trouble. And they essentially just have Freddie Peralta in their rotation. That's pretty scary. DL Hall, I guess, went to go see Dr. Neil Atrache for his knee. And Jacob Junis is coming back at some point, coming off this 60-day DL with his shoulder impingement. So he'll be back at some point. He's a guy that I think people know I've been have a lot of shares of. So I would love to him for him to come back and be good. But yeah, this team is this rotation is in trouble, and a trade would make sense. Maybe match him with his brother. Get Tyler back with Trevor.
There you go. The McGill brothers, the wreck shop, like the Bash brothers from the Mighty Ducks. Yeah. There is a young double-A prospect they have, Jacob Mizorowski, but his whip seems too high for a call-up anytime soon. But I was looking through their depth chart. It is there. You would, like you said, there has to be a trade in the works if they're going to even field five starters here in the near future.
And I'm curious how I think Aaron Ashby pitched today. We know that he was getting absolutely shelled up until his start last week, and it was a gem. And then I guess he had another start on Tuesday, and or maybe it's tomorrow. Maybe it's Wednesday. I don't know. Oh, wait, what's this? Aaron Ashby has a locker and is present today in Philadelphia. That's a tweet from 2 hours ago. Okay.
Look at that. You speaking it into existence.
All right. All right. Cool.
Well done, Vlad.
All right. Let's see. And that's another one. He's just been so bad since coming back, like, you know, through the minors and his little stint earlier. When did he pitch?
He pitched April 8th. I actually spent some money on him because he came up, got called up. I thought he was going to be a live arm with some strikeout upside and just got shellacked. He pitched 3 2/3, 8 runs, 4 earned, 6 hits, 2 walks. And that was at Cincinnati, and then got sent right back down.
Yeah. So through like 9 starts in AAA, and this is including the gem that he threw, what was it, like last Thursday or something like that, he has a almost an ERA near 7 with a 20% strikeout rate and an 18% walk rate.
Still in the positive.
All right. So there it is. Aaron Ashby is coming back. And final note here on Garrett Crochet. Have you heard anything about these rumors? I would be as stoked for him as a player to get out of there and get to San Diego, but I would hate to face him more often as a Dodger fan. And these Padre fans, honestly, sorry, Sammy Reed and other friends of mine, Padres fans, that they're getting a little obnoxious. I'm starting to, I don't want to say dislike, because I don't really dislike, I try not to dislike, but they're getting kind of a little bit more obnoxious than Giants fans these days.
Wow, coming from the most obnoxious fan base, that's saying something, Vlad.
No.
Shots fired. No. You know, I actually heard a rumor, somebody talking fantasy-wise, it would make sense to trade Crochet. I think it was Jeff Erickson on the Sunday pod with Scott Ginstad. He was talking about possibly trading Crochet. And, as a rebuilding team, you immediately, that doesn't make sense. He's young, he's controllable. But if you can get 3, 4, 5 prospects to fill the cupboard for a really good arm, but possible injury, definitely injury history, it might make sense for them. And San Diego has been known to take the big shots with their GM. I think it's AJ Preller. He just does not care about prospects. He trades and trades and trades, and I would not be surprised, but anytime you hear a rumor, it's usually not coming to fruition. The trades that happen, you're really not hearing much about. So be interesting what comes next.
Oh, so this is actually a real report, and it's been reported everywhere that the Padres are showing strong interest in him. This is per Ken Rosenthal and other Padre beat reporters. And looks like it's something. And the White Sox are open to trading Luis Robert Jr. as well. So we'll see. Let's go. I love trades.
I would hope there'd be 29 other teams interested in Garrett Crochet because he's pretty good too. So probably not just the Padres.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Vlad, we need to talk about Luis Gil or Luis Hill. His pronunciation eludes me sometimes, but he has just been on the most incredible heater. And I hate to bring this into the world, but is he this year's Strider, or is this just a short term, going to flame out here when it flames out?
I don't know how. I mean, I guess we don't know. I guess we'll see. We don't know until it happens. As far as fantasy is concerned, it's you have him. If you have him, you're ecstatic. He's 100% rostered in in all formats. He's elite, one of the best starting pitchers of the year. And if you're looking to, like, for example, sell high, I don't know. I mean, what kind of targets would you be looking for? I mean, I don't think anyone's going to give you Tarik Skubal for him. You know, what else? What else is a good, you know, you may not get Glasnow for him or Wheeler, but.
Would you take Gausman for him?
No, I would not. I'd rather have Heal for sure. Gausman's like broken.
It's just interesting, you know, that coming out of the bullpen, the long, you know, pitching 2 or 3 innings out of the bullpen, similar to what Strider did the year he broke out. I don't know how many innings Hill's going to throw. So that's my only concern, having him in a couple of really important spots. I am just loving every time he pitches right now, though. It's been a blast to watch.
And yeah, I remember that first weekend of FAB. And I feel like I regretted, I won him. I remember in a bunch of leagues with a huge cover, you know, the difference between my bid and the secondary, the backup. And I don't know, it just kind of felt like I was off on the market. And so far those teams, I'm ecstatic. Unfortunately, did not get him in any 15 teamers. These were all 12s, but either way, it's like, I'm just not worried. Like when I know, you know, when he's coming up, it's just happening. And it feels different because all of the supporting numbers and the swinging strike rate and just everything is just outstanding. It's different than somebody like a Seth Lugo, who, for example, you know, has been electric, but just gave up, what, 5 runs. You just kind of know the other shoe is going to drop at some point. But that's not necessarily the case for somebody like Luis Heal. You know, I don't know who else you can kind of put in that boat. Garrett Crochet. I think Ranger Suarez is probably somewhere in the middle. He's just been absolutely dominant. Maybe his swinging strike rate isn't as high, but yeah, there's just a new wave of great starting pitchers.
Yeah. Anytime these new YARMs come up, it's so much fun to watch. It's kind of God, when you're flipping the channels through the games, like, oh, I'm going to watch him pitch, even if I don't have him on a team, just because they are electric and it's good for baseball.
So we are going to talk about some matchups for the weekend that will be coming up. Maybe by the time you hear this, you'll be setting your lineups for the weekend. And we'll take an early look at FAB a little bit, talk about some stashes. First, a little word from our sponsor at Underdog Fantasy. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you've got to try Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's picking game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. You pick 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code FTN, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com on Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code FTN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. And in Tennessee, 1-800-889-9789. Weekend matchups. You feel comfortable talking about them now this early in the week as we record on Tuesday night, with, you know, all the crazy pitching changes that happen all the time?
It's always fun to look ahead. I mean, even if we're talking about something that doesn't come to fruition, it's good to kind of talk about it, get your mind wrapped around it, and because you'll come up with something similar to that at some point. So I'm definitely game to talk about some Friday, Saturday, Sunday matchups and see what's going on.
Anything stand out to you, like any series that you're really looking forward to? Because I feel like there's one, at least for me, I think probably for everybody, like this is kind of like the series of the year.
Maybe. Well, I mean, yeah, you got the, you know, the Phillies and Yankees right now, for the Red Sox coming up this weekend. I'm trying to think, who do we have coming up this weekend? You got the London series, but then Dodgers Yankees, that's going to be some fun. It is possible World Series preview. The Yankees have been playing well. They've been incredibly healthy, other than the Garrett Cole And now Clark Schmidt, but their offense with these guys that have gotten injured all this, you know, Judge, Stanton, Rizzo. So they've been healthy, and but they have Jason Dominguez waiting in the wings. So they've been fun to watch, and their pitching has been nails. So I know the Dodgers are in a little funk right now offensively, maybe because they haven't played Miguel Vargas. Vlad. But yeah, it should be fun. And then you got that London series. Anytime you get to go overseas and expand the game of baseball, that's fun for the Mets and Phillies to do a little two-game series over there.
Yeah, that game, that series, it's a two-gamer. Mets Phillies. Sean Manaea and Ranger Suarez are going to battle on Saturday. Ranger Suarez, at least as of now, is flying to London with them. He is fine and healthy after last weekend's incident. And then maybe Sunday, the sparks truly fly for these offenses. It might be may want to be careful not benching too many of our Mets and Phillies. It's an SHI show. The Jose Quintana and Taiwan Walker. That might be fun.
Yeah, just because they have two games on the weekend, be very careful about not starting your good players, because it could be a lot of runs scored on Sunday and possibly Saturday. I don't know if Ranger is confirmed yet for that Saturday start. If I was a Ranger owner, I would probably hope he would actually get pushed to next week, but we shall see. That should be fun. And then, you know, you got the Cubs playing Cincy, that rivalry in the NL Central. That's always hot and heavy when those two teams get together. So there's a lot of fun matchups this week, and I'm looking forward to watching some baseball and having some fun on the couch.
Oh, I need to watch more. I always have it on in the background, but I'm always like working or like, you know, the kids running around. I love to like kind of watch more games or like go to my MLB app and, you know, I guess the one place I could do it is like driving home from work. I could turn on the game, but that's probably a bad idea. I should not do that and do not advise it.
Audio version of the game, you mean, right, Vlad?
Yeah, of course, on the radio. and by the way, the Cubs and, the way it shakes out right now is they might be facing, let's see if I got this right, that there might be two lefties in each of those matchups. So I think maybe looking out for platoons for both teams might be something that we need to look into. Chicago and Cincinnati, which means less of Michael Bush and Pete Crow Armstrong. You probably get some extra games from Patrick Wisdom. I don't know where you're going to play Patrick Wisdom, maybe on a NFBC DC or if you play DFS.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really start streaming him in Fab Leagues, but their DCs, DFS, he does have a lot of power in getting those lefties, and it's in Great American Small Park, so there might be some home runs flying there. Man, I was just looking at your notes. Luis Gil and versus Tyler Glasnow on Sunday for Dodgers Yankees.
Yeah,
is that any good?
Yes,
I'm gonna have to mark time on my calendar just to sit down and watch it, maybe record it and watch it. But that's gonna be some fun pitching matchup.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, where is that? I should know this. Where is that game played? Where is that series played? On the road or in?
I am not sure, Vlad. That's great podcasting for us right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give me 1 sec if you want to talk about the Blue Jays going into Oakland and having the non-murderer's row of pitching.
Yeah, they're playing in Yankee Stadium. It's Cody Poteet and Yamamoto on Friday, Nestor Cortez and Gavin Stone on Saturday, and then, yeah, Luis Gil and Glasnow on Sunday. And That's going to be obviously the Sunday night baseball game of the week. So that'll be a 4:10 Eastern, 4:10 West, 4:10 Pacific, 7:10 Eastern start on Sunday.
I'm looking forward to that one.
And then on the real quick on the Cincy side, because I had mentioned that the Cincinnati Reds are probably going to face two lefties. And that's assuming Jordan Wicks returns to the rotation and he pitches this Sunday. So they'd be facing Justin Steele, Ben Brown, and Jordan Wicks. So you got two lefties there. And Cincinnati has some pretty strong platoon splits there. Jake Fraley, as we know, usually he's on a nice little hitting streak. He's, I think he's hitting somewhere near 300. And, you know, we I think we were writing him off last week. He's got like almost no power. We know he was like dealing, I think he's dealt with like three or four ailments so far this season. ISO is like under 100, but yeah, he's hitting near 300. He's got 9 stolen bases in just 45 games. And I don't know if he got a hit today, but he was on a 9-game hitting streak, 10-game hitting streak. But nevertheless, he's not going to be playing much this weekend. And then quick victory lap. Hopefully I save you some money on Nick Martini and not bidding on him, because see Martini and Coors seemed like fun until you notice the lefties. And then, hey, he gets sent down, and 25-year-old 15th rounder Blake Dunn is up for the Reds.
If you bought him this week in Fab, you're going to need a martini for bidding on Martini. But yeah, that's you save some people some money by putting that note on there. So kudos.
And then about this Blake Dunn guy, he's a right-hander. He, again, 2021, 15th round pick. In the minors, he's got in AAA, about 44 games, 4 home runs, 9 stolen bases, a .223 average, and a 30% strikeout rate. So let's see what he's got. He's going to be playing at least against one of those lefties, maybe both this weekend.
These call-ups are all very well-deserved.
Yeah. And then, by the way, Stuart Fairchild, he was the leadoff man on in Tuesday's game. So that, again, against the lefty. Again, this is deep league stuff that we're talking about. But yeah, TJ Friedl is pretty much your leadoff man against righties. And then against lefties, Friedl still plays, but just lower in the lineup.
Yeah, yeah. A couple other matchups to discuss. The Nationals, they're at home against Boston, and they go Chris Sale, Charlie Morton, Max Fried. That's a tough little 3-game set. I know in one of my big leagues, I just benched CJ Abrams this first 4 games because he was out with a shoulder injury Monday, and I think the previous Saturday and Sunday, so I didn't want to mess around with that. But he was back in the lineup today, thankfully. But that's going to be a tough little go for the Nats. Although Sale did get hit by the A's this last start, so he is human.
You know what's crazy? I saw Dallas Braden, the color guy for the A's, former A's pitcher. He kind of called it that was going to happen. I don't know how, or it was just a lucky kind of thing. But I mean, Sale hasn't been touched pretty much period this year. Maybe gave up a few earned runs in a game in April, but he was holding he had the best numbers among any starting pitcher in the month of May. He was electric, and then boom, lo and behold, just gives it back there in that first start on June 1st. So that'll be interesting. And these Nationals, it's an intriguing roster, because, you know, for example, they're at the top, Abrams, Lane Thomas. I feel like Lane Thomas is either 0-for-4 or like a home run and 2 stolen bases. Like, the guy is insane. So, you know, and then you got Luis Garcia Jr. This is another intriguing, he's like the Jock Peterson of this team in a way. And what I mean by that is, when he plays, he's a platoon guy. He only plays against right-handed pitching. He's front and center in that lineup. He's like third, fourth, and hits really well. And then against lefties, he's just not playing. So it's a very kind of interesting setup there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised they're not playing him against lefties, but apparently they have so many good players on that roster, they need to platoon him. But anytime you go from batting third to the bench, it's just a little goofy in my opinion. But I think these players would be a lot better if the managers actually let them learn how to play against lefties and learn how to hit both sides. But all these analytics say different. So I am not a manager, and I am not one of the guys in the front office doing the analytics. So who am I to talk about it?
And Jesse Winker, by the way, let me point out the fact that the guy has 10 stolen bases this year, which is more than he's had in like his 8-year career. Basically,
I was going to say his career. that Dude. Actually, you could win a bar bet with that one, Vlad. I did not know he had 10. That is shocking. I mean, but Eddie Rosario's running. So anybody on that team other than CJ Abrams right now is stealing. But you can't steal first. So that's why Abrams isn't running right now.
That makes sense. And Jesse Winker has been really solid. Like, I remember many NFBC DC drafts. This is before he got signed, where I really wanted to take him 50th overall on a team. And I did that on a couple of them. And I really wish I had gotten more. Like, little did I know he would be like a everyday hitter and, you know, refurbished and just kind of back to normal and stealing bases. Like, these are just, and earning outfield eligibility. These are just things you didn't expect. But he's been phenomenal. Double digit walk rate. Was it, you know, 3 for 5 with 3 ribbies in Monday's game. Like, just hitting really well. Just really impressed with some of these guys on the Nats.
Yeah, it's nice to see somebody like that get their career back online too, because he was looking like he was on his way out of the league. And so for him to turn it around and be an everyday player again, it's good to see. I wish I got in on him when I had the opportunity, because he was basically free. But I missed the boat.
And then the Cleveland Guardians, they are lining up for 3 lefties this weekend, which obviously we know not good for Bo Naylor and not good for Will Brennan, if you happen to be playing him in a DC or 15 teamers. But, like, you know, Kyle Manzardo, for example, he has started a couple of games against lefties. It's just out of necessity at this point. And then somebody I had never heard of, maybe a lot of people haven't, but Daniel Schneeman, a left-handed hitter. He started each of the last 2 games, Sunday and Tuesday, kind of flexible guy, hit second, second base, shortstop. As we know, like Brian Rocchio has not been hitting well. And it looks like they need some help. So just, hey, rambling about random Guardians here.
It is truly amazing how many players make their debut in the major leagues that I have never heard of. I feel like I have a pretty well-rounded knowledge of the major league player pool and future major league player pool. And there's probably 40 to 50 guys every year that come up over the course of 162 games that I'm like, who is that?
Well,
kudos to him. Well, he was
a 33rd round pick in 2018. Out of BYU.
I should know it then.
Yeah. 1003rd pick overall in his 27.
On me. I got to get better. That's I definitely got to get better.
And if you can remember how to spell Schneeman, that'll be very, and it's a fun name. Fun name to say, Schneeman.
Sounds like a Seinfeld character.
Yeah. I had a joke that obviously didn't land, but I don't care. I'm not always looking to land. I just want to like express myself, but like in my head, I just keep thinking like the law firm of, you know, Schneeman, Freeman and Fry, and, you know, you can replace Quan. You can throw Quan in there if you want, really just make it a really, you know, really awesome firm. We're off the rails. We are off the rails today. Marlins. I'm sorry. The Marlins are the team that's playing these Guardians, and they're going to be, man, they're an all lefty lineup. I mean, rotation, and something's got to give here.
Max, hopefully Max Meyer comes back and gets in the rotation and makes at least one righty in there. But and I think the Angels are pretty heavy lefty as well, as far as the rotation, but the Marlins, is it all 5 starters right now are left-handed?
Luzardo, by the way, poor guy.
Oh,
that was rough.
Not great.
You know what else is rough? As you sit Brandon Lau, wherever you have him, because it's a 2-game week, and then he starts against a lefty, and then he hits a home run and 5 RBI. And that's a brutal feel on the bench.
Yeah, it's one of the things you get lucky if you start him, because you have injuries or you don't have the depth. Most everybody has that on their bench, and they're really sad. It's kind of like the Matt Vierling 4 home run week last week. A lot of people didn't get that because they had their third baseman come back, whether it was Austin Riley or whoever else. A lot of people I've talked to said they left that on their bench, but it's tough stats to miss out on.
Last series here we'll touch on for the weekend, and just considering starting or sitting, the very strange Toronto Blue Jays, just a weird vibes there in that organization. They are going to face the A's in Oakland at Pitchers Park, but they're going to face some questionable pitchers here. It's Hogan Harris, Luis Medina, who actually came back and pitched a gem on Sunday. If he pitches another one or two of those, people are going to start bidding on him. And then as soon as you put him in the lineup, he's going to serve up like an eight spot on you. That's just kind of how it works with him.
Whipsawed. Any of those, most of those ace pitchers just kind of can really whipsaw you pretty quick. They look good until you start them. But every year there's somebody usable, whether it's Paul Blackburn or I think the pickup this last weekend was Joey Estes, right? He has been pretty good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's an interesting rotation there. So Mitch Spence, I think threw like five or six shutout innings. He was fantastic. And then Joey Estes is their kind of their top prospect pitcher. He was lined up for two starts, and I think some people bid and picked him up. I had him on some conditionals, but it ended up being pushed. So now his two start week will end up being next week. So we'll see how his start goes. And then if you remember Hogan Harris from last year, remember he was the guy with like the worst major league debut in history. Do you happen to remember that? What happened to him?
No, do tell. I must have missed that one.
So he came up on April the 14th. Check this line out if you can remember this one. He faced one batter. He had five walks. Or no, I'm sorry. He faced eight batters, but he just got through one third of an inning. Five walks, it's one hit, and six earned runs.
Think he was a little nervous?
162 ERA with a 57.26, or I mean, not that, like, I don't know, like a 12 whip or something like that. It was crazy. And then he had a stretch where he was decent, pitched, you know, a few starts. I think we, you know, some of us picked him up for a few starts and then was decent throughout the year. And then right at the end of the season, another eight spot served up to the Dodgers. And then, you know, pretty much that was that. But stay away from the ace pitchers here.
Hopefully some of my Blue Jays can get going, including my boy Bo Bichette, who looked like he was getting back online or on track and started missing everything again. So that whole offense is struggling other than Davis Schneider.
Yeah, Davis Schneider and George Springer, by the way. He hit a home run on Tuesday. He's starting to put it together. I had a little something I tweeted on Monday night as I was writing the Cutline article and just noticing how Springer's been heating up, that it's really up to Davis Schneider to not lose that leadoff job, because if he goes in a little mini slump, he'll be back to kind of hitting later in that lineup and they'll put Springer right back. So we hope that's not the case. I think a lot of us are big Davis Schneider fans. We hope that doesn't happen, but you know, we got to be prepared for everything.
Yep. Yep.
Early look at week 12 Fab, and it's early, but it's good to look at some of these players now, just looking ahead to the schedules. One thing I noticed, something new, by the way, RotoWire added. So, you know, their 7 and 14 day pitching schedule, pitcher projections are pretty solid. They have now extended it to 28 days. So, God bless to, I think Adam Wolf, somebody used to work with many years ago. I think he runs, manages that with a whole bunch of other people there. But like, dude, obviously we don't know. I mean, that's not those not how the rotations are going to line up. But having a snapshot and seeing where potential two starts may hit or may be going, but also seeing who's got five games weeks versus seven game weeks and sort of being able to start to plan your offense and your pickups, I think is helpful. So if you do have that sub, check out that, you know, I feel like I don't want to share that with people, but it's kind of my duty. So if you do have that sub, check out that 28 day starting pitcher projection.
Yeah. I loved looking at that. It was a little bit of data overload when I pulled it up, but it's fun to kind of look through and, oh, this team's only got 5 days or five games coming up in 2 weeks and kind of planning for it. You know, you got the Reds at home, you got the Rockies at home, and kind of planning ahead where, you know, the really good fantasy players are, you know, a week or two ahead. So kind of using that tool to kind of get on the same level there.
So as far as the week, I mean, you want to start with your boy. Is he your boy, by the way, Jack Suwinski? He came back, hit a bomb.
Captain Jack, I was a big fan last year, and he was a target of mine this year. He seemed like he was making progress. He just, if once he started swinging more in the zone, I thought he was really going to take off because his barrel rate was good. His swing and miss was getting better, but he just got in this funk he couldn't get out of. And he got sent down. I dropped him on a bunch of teams. And all of a sudden, I pull up the box score today, but I didn't miss the news. And he's batting ninth and hit a homer off Tyler Glasnow. And the Pirates won 1-0 against the Dodgers and because they didn't play Miguel Vargas again. But not going to bring that subject up. But yeah, he is somebody I'm interested in. And is he going to be rosterable? Is he going to be on the short side of a platoon? I saw Jiwon Bae went on the IL again. I'm pretty sure that's why Sawinski got called up. Is he a guy that is worth a look? I know 15s he's probably is, but what about 12s? What are your thoughts on him?
He's a streaky hitter. I remember, you know, if we have like Brandon Tuma from Underdog on the show, he would tell you about what the win rates are of people that had Jack Sawinski last season among the winners, because he just like won weeks, and that was because of just a few key weeks that he had that were incredible. They were some of the most productive. They were David Fry type weeks basically last season, and then just quiet and cold outside of that. So very unique profile where he has a very high walk rate. It's very streaky, low batting average, could steal some bases, but like the power is big. And so, you know, I don't want to like align and say he's like a Nolan Gorman type, but in a way it is, because it's a lefty, doesn't strike out as much as Gorman, but like, but, you know, these are the type of players where you want to kind of catch it at the right spot. And again, it's another reason why we need to have these short memories in fantasy. Like if we just know that if Nolan Gorman's healthy all season, no matter how much he's slumping through whatever parts of the season, he's going to get his 25 plus home runs. It's going to come with like a 30-35% walk strikeout rate. We just know it. But those stats are going to come at some point as long as he's healthy. And a lot of times it comes in bunches. And that's what's happening right now. Like Gorman's literally hitting home runs like every single day. You know, if we go up several levels to somebody like Aaron Judge, think about the discourse back in April where it's like, oh my God, is he done? Is he toast? Is he playing hurt? Whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, he's just crushing everything every single time he's at the plate. And again, we just go back to the same topics here. This stuff is all, it's all cyclical, and you want to kind of catch things at the right times, and you don't want to like, we're not looking to like chase previous stats. You know, it's different with obviously somebody like Judge. He's just locked into your lineup. You're not thinking about it. You're not worrying about it. But Jack Sawinski, you know, if you start to get that feel for it, like if it's somebody you're interested in, you dig in a little bit. Okay, you hit a home run. Okay, great. How is he looking at his plate appearances? Like, you know, go in and take a look. It's the similar thing we were dealing with Luke Fraley a couple of weeks ago. You go in and Nelson Velasquez, you can almost a week ago can start to get that feel. Okay, he's getting back into the swing of things. Might be time to, you know, pick him up and stream him. This is a big part of the game. It's the name of the game.
Yeah, and getting ahead of it. So hopefully Captain Jack doesn't do anything else this week and I can get him for cheap and then he gets hot for a month. But that's another story.
Yeah, by the way, I don't even know where his in 12 teamers, he's available for the most part. He's 70% rostered. So that's, you know, over 80% of leagues he's available. And then probably pretty well available in main events, I would think.
Yeah, I know he got dropped quite a bit when he got sent down and he was struggling before that. So I don't have the exact roster ownership. But he should be. I would guess that he's available in over 50%.
Well, let's do a quick. I want to do a little matchups deep dive and just see. I mean, obviously, we know. Hey, you know what? We're actually talking about the Pirates. It's next on our little agenda here. We're talking about schedules for next week. And guess what? The Pirates are going to Coors. So guess what? Sorry, buddy. Jack Sawinski will not be cheap.
Unless they got three lefties at Coors, right, Vlad?
Yeah, and well, they'll probably catch Ty Black, but other than that, it's going to be Feltner and Hudson, Dakota Hudson, which I think seems pretty hot. And then they're going to face Miles Mikolas, like absolute gas can Miles Mikolas in St. Louis. So yeah, there's some good matchups. Then Pittsburgh's going to go and play a bunch of home games, against the Cincinnati Reds, three-game series with the Reds, and a three-game series with Tampa, who do have some decent starting pitchers. That week, they're probably only going to run into Lodolo as the lefty, and so they got a bunch of righties there. So, yeah, I mean, we got a couple of weeks here where he's very startable.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully we can get a decent price on him this weekend and get him rolling because, he, like you said, it's all about streaks, and he was probably the streakiest, most streaky hitter last year, and he carried some teams for a good month when he was hot and then couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. So just catch him at the right time.
Man, and that's great to know that. I didn't even really think about it or look that far ahead to know that Henry Davis is going to Coors. So that's a nice little bonus there. Nick Gonzalez, he's pretty locked in. I'm starting to get a little bit more serious about him. Really trying to be careful to not just dismiss players based on bias or not just go the straight, you know, grumpy old baseball fan route and just be like, he sucks. Like, you know, give people a chance. Like Jared Triolo had a shot, did not capture it. Gonzalez is a little bit of a better hitting prospect. I think he's going to stick around. He's going to be their second baseman for a while. I think in 12 teamers, you'll be able to pick him up. Obviously people seeing at Coors, and that's going to be intriguing. And then Connor Joe, he just comes and goes, you know, where did you come from? Where did you go? Mr. Connor
Joe. Night Joe, huh? I was just going to say Connor's been really good this year. I picked him up in one of my mains with Matt Modica, and we've been kind of playing about 80-90% of the time, and he's been really good batting third in that lineup, and he's not really platooning as much as I thought he would. He's playing against both lefties and righties, and he's been really helpful to have because first base and outfield eligibility, very valuable.
Yeah, I remember we all discovered him on the Rockies, and a bunch of us just like picked him up. It was a couple of seasons ago, and he had a nice little run there. Was hitting some home runs, was leading off there for a while too. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. Now he's batting third, and that lineup fluctuates a bit with Cabrian Hayes back and Gonzalez. Speaking of Nick Gonzalez, his skills have really picked up this year, made some big improvements, and was, I think, a top 10 pick in the draft. So there's some pedigree there too. So he is locked in there at second base.
By the way, I caught some flack for a tweet I posted about O'Neill Cruz because I was just looking at the situation of how cold he's been, the fact that he is now listed as in a platoon. And in fact, he is. He hasn't started against lefties the last couple of games. He looks ice cold. And I mean, he's just been horrible. And I mean, to me, I mean, they're not sending him down. They're not sending him down. He's got one option left, but nevertheless, O'Neill Cruz was going to figure it out at some point. Like, we all loved him for a reason. What I really hate is the randoms that pop in and like, if only exit velocity was a roto category. And all I can say to that is, what, you don't have max exit velocity as a roto category? I mean, come on, man. What league are you playing here?
Yeah, I mean, aren't you playing in an 18-by-18 league?
Yeah.
Let's play some real fantasy.
Well, where I got the flack was saying that, hey, if you get a chance to buy low, I would do it. And you kind of just know you're kind of dealing with the streaks. And in fact, he may not be like the top 60 overall player that he was drafted as, even higher than that, really. But some of the options I had there, if you can get, no one's going to give you, I mean, you're not, no one's going to give you O'Neill Cruz, I don't think, for like a Bryce Terang or a Tyro Estrada. But those are the couple of options that I thought were like comparable. Terang's stealing bases, he's hot, you know, like somebody wants to get rid of Cruz, that would make sense. The one I really caught flack on was Willy Adames. And I realize I included him with those three, but Willy Adames is kind of on another level. And I mean, in terms of on a higher level. So I was doing the cut line points rankings. I've noticed he's like a top 20 points producer. He's really solid. And I think I have this bias with Adames because he's hit like under 230 in each of the last two seasons. But man, when you look at that Milwaukee lineup and he's sitting right in the middle of that, that's a really valuable spot. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and I don't want to say take an L, but I might walk that back where I might say that, you know, shoot, I'd rather have Willy Adames than O'Neill Cruz right now. But like around Contreras, Yelich, Hoskins, Ortiz, this is a pretty good spot for him.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting with the O'Neill Cruz. Anybody that likes him or owns him in leagues is pretty they're a big O'Neill Cruz fan, so you're really not allowed to say anything bad about him. So you know, the trade leagues, he's a tough guy to acquire. It'd have to be an owner getting really sour on him because of the 120 mile an hour exit velocity. Those skills don't grow on trees, and when he does figure it out, it's going to be fun to watch. But he has been really miserably bad. But I'm a huge Willie Adames fan on the other side, and I would take Willie Adames 10 out of 10 times over O'Neill Cruz right now.
Mm-hmm. Another nice, interesting schedule next week, the Mariners, Seattle Mariners. Fine. They dumped their quote-unquote offensive coordinator, and no, this is not the Seahawks, the Mariners. And they have been heating up. Julio Rodriguez has been hitting better. Ty France, even Josh Rojas hit a bomb on Tuesday. Mitch Garver starting to turn the corner a little bit. Maybe they can get that going for Mitch Haniger as well. But a pretty good lineup offense here to hopefully match their pitching that has been excellent. And they might face a bunch of righties, but they'll face the White Sox. And, of course, they'll have to battle with Garrett Crochet, but they'll also run into guys like Nick Mastrini. So those are some good matchups. They'll face the Rangers as well, whose rotation is not full bore right now, and they might actually not have to face a Nathan Eovaldi or a John Gray. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, obviously, if Ty France is available in a 12-teamer, I think he's an option. I think I recommend him just about every week. But a guy I took off my 15-team bid list last week who might be interesting next week is Dominic Canzone. Top 10 Italian names in baseball. Another tweet of mine from today. But Dominic Canzone is interesting. He's one guy I want to track, see how he's doing this weekend and if he might be a fab ad this weekend.
Yeah, as long as I don't have to watch Luke Rayleigh play the outfield anymore and cost my Seattle pitchers runs. He's a butcher out there, man. Seattle just signed Victor Robles, the retread former number one prospect from the Nats that got DFA'd. Mm-hmm. So that would be interesting how that outfield plays out. But there was another young speedster that got called up for Seattle, but he's only playing against lefties right now. I think Ryan Bliss. I picked him up in a spot where I needed some speed, and they got two lefties this week. So I'm interested if he gets a little run, could be a spark plug for that offense. They got him, I believe, from the Diamondbacks, and he was a 40-50 steal guy with some minor pop. Mm-hmm. So they have, you know, Dylan Moore, who got hot for a bit, see if he stays hot. They have Josh Rojas. So it'll be interesting to see right-handed pitching. You know, Canzone definitely is playing against righties. Ty France is playing against lefties and righties, but he has been really hot. And it's nice to see Julio get off the schneid. So that offense definitely needs a pick-me-up because it's been anemic.
And we'll see if Jorge Polanco, who is dealing with a hamstring injury, has been just awful in the first couple of months of the season. But he might be back this weekend, or at least he's eligible, I believe, as of Thursday or Friday to return. And that might come at the expense of Ryan Bliss. So we'll see how that goes. Another, just a couple quick matchups for next week, and then we'll close things out with a little stash talk. Marlins, possibly four lefties next week. Mets and Nats. The Mets and the Nationals both have a lot of lefty starters in their rotation. And so it's back to, you know, if you have Jesus Sanchez, you're not starting him. You know, Jazz Chisholm, you're starting him, but not as exciting. Probably maybe Brian De La Cruz can wake up because that's the guy that can kind of hit lefties. And then if you have any Tim Anderson left on your team, just dump him. We talked about his one on WRC plus last week. Might be down to zero now. He's absolutely horrendous. And then as far as a tough matchup, by the way, the Red Sox, who hopefully get Tyler O'Neill back, he comes back at a tough time. They're going to face the Phillies and the Yankees next week. If they were to line up according to sticking to rotation, the Red Sox next week would face Zach Wheeler, Christopher Sanchez, Aaron Nola, Luis Gil, Carlos Rodon, and Marcus Stroman.
That's a pretty rough stretch. Yeah, so the Red Sox might be in a little bit of trouble. Now, good pitchers only can be good for so long, right? And offense can wake up against anybody, i.e. the A's against Chris Sale. But that is a tough little six-game stretch for the Red Sox to kind of face those arms.
Stashing. We talked a little bit about Jack Suwinski. You know, I've been, you see me talking about some of these guys that I've been tracking, all these minor league guys. We, you know, a few of us got Henry Davis last week, but what about these other guys? Like, when are they coming back? Not just the prospects or the young guys that have disappointed, like the James Outmans or the Jordan Walkers, the Victor Scott the seconds, Parker Meadowses, but like some of these other arms and pitchers. So, but where do you want to take this stash convo?
Yeah, and this is always a fun game theory conversation, you know, the art of stashing, and I believe it is an art, how to do it, when to do it, why to do it, what your roster looks like, what type of player to look like, how does it change between 12 and 15 team leagues. I truly, for me personally, I believe it's very roster dependent. You got to have a very healthy, productive roster in order to try the stashes. And you got to be careful who you're stashing for, because if you start doing the guys that you stash that aren't really going to pay off, and I'll just throw a name out there, Eduardo Rodriguez, how much is he really going to pay off when he does come back? And injured guys stay injured, but there's two different types of stashes. You have the rookies who were dropped or drafted and dropped. We'll use a Jordan, or not, I guess Jordan Walker's not a rookie, but you have Parker Meadows, Tyler Black, the younger guys, and Jordan Walker and James Outman. And then you have rookies, or then you have veterans that have struggled and got dropped, or injured guys, we'll call them Tommy Edman, Merrill Kelly, Esturi Ruiz, these type of guys that are coming back from injury. Do you have a preference for stashing between injured guys and young prospects? And which one would you rather? What is your kind of game theory aspect on stashes with these?
I mean, my big thing, and we talked about a little bit last week, and kind of, I guess, a common theme for us, it's these the high payoff guys, the prospect hitters who have struggled in the majors, who were highly valued in draft season or with fab spend, and then everybody just forgot about them. And I mean, there's so many poster boys, quote unquote, but the Josh Lowe from a couple of years ago is really a prime example where he truly paid off last season. And that's what I'm looking at. It's just somebody who's not my guy, like a James Outman. I was, you know, remember, big on him last season. Worked out till it didn't. Then he, you know, kind of struggled and started striking out a bunch. And this year at the price, I was like, I'm out. I'm out on James Outman. That doesn't mean I'm out all season. It's I'm out until he gets dropped. And then lo and behold, he's crushing it right now in the minors. And it feels like there's a spot for him coming soon. And if you kind of catch him at the right time, it could work out magically. You know, Andy Páez is not hitting all that well. Dodgers are going to have a tough decision to make here with Chris Taylor sooner than later, and just eat the money. It's horrible, but I mean, those are the type of stashes. Anyone that's injured, a pitcher coming off injury, like, no, thank you. I don't want to pay for the name brand. I wouldn't even call Eduardo Rodriguez a name brand, because he's just, I feel like he's been kind of mediocre for the most part of his career. And you're kind of looking for more problems than solutions. So you're waiting on him, comes back, he only goes three or four innings, or he serves up seven runs, and then it's like you feel even worse. Like, what have you been holding him for? And that's kind of my concern with like even a Shane Boz. He's not looking really good right now in the minors. I didn't really prioritize him. He's available in a bunch of the cut lines. I just didn't go after it. I don't know. Are the Rays going to let him go full bore? He's not even pitching five innings right now. Are they going to even let him pitch five and qualify for a win? So I feel like you're just asking for trouble with those guys. And I'd rather just, you know, go in for the young guys with talent who are healthy. And that's the most important part, healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's a really good point. And, you know, a lot of it, I think with the, even the pitcher stashes, especially, you got to take a little more risk based on your fab standings. If you are low on fab, when these pitchers come back, they're very expensive. So you do have to get a week or two or 3 weeks ahead of it and take some chances, because when Shane Boz comes up, he's going to be $200-$300, whether he's worth it or not. So there is something to that, but you had a really good point with the injured pitchers in the four innings. It takes 2 to 3 major league starts for them to even get to five innings, it seems like. So, you know, oh, they're back, they got called up. That does not mean they're going to be starting them in the next week or two. You got to wait even longer, and hopefully they stay healthy. So there's a major, major risk factor with that. So I do believe you're right. A question, a player that's 77% owned in the mains, Devin Williams. What are you doing with him? Is he, is this about the time you would look to stash him with the back injury? I mean, a fractured back seems a little scary, but talk about a guy that can really seem to pay off if he does come back healthy, especially with how expensive saves are.
Yeah, I mean, he was the number one or number two closer off draft boards, and people have been sneakily adding him in 15 and 12 teamers. He's been in the Fab article the last couple of weeks, so I've been calling for a stash. So for me, that feels like a little bit different than waiting for, like, you know, Alex Cobb or Max Scherzer, E-Rod, Eduardo Rodriguez. These guys are all kind of the same to me. Like, I don't know what to expect when they get back. And maybe the same case with Devin Williams, but Devin Williams is a legit game changer. So if you don't have a lot of stashes, or if you don't have any stashes really, and closers have been a problem for you, then that's a priority for you. Even this past week, with the usage of Reed Garrett and him kind of negatively regressing, and just like that Mets bullpen in general, and Jake Diekman getting a late save opportunity, I started prioritizing even Devin Williams over him. Granted, it's a long time to wait. At this point, it's going to be at least a month and a half, as long as he's not ahead of timetable. But on a team where I'm truly desperate and I need the saves, I think that might be something I might do. But it's tough, because at some point you'll be in a situation where you will get another injury on your team, or someone gets demoted, and like, you want to hold that person. And before you know it, you're in that pickle where you don't have middle infield coverage or an outfield five when you need them for the half week.
Yeah. Is there anything worse than holding a guy for 6 weeks and having to drop him when he's coming back in eight? It's just like, you put all this invested capital in it with that roster spot. But sometimes it comes due, and you have to make that drop in order to field that team that's playing every day, because tough roster decisions happen every week. And that's the mm-hmm. scary part about stashing. You only, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, really can afford one stash. Once you start doing two, three, four stashes, you're asking for trouble. You're mm-hmm. playing with fire. So you got to be really smart with that.
Some other just mentions here about some of these guys. Parker Meadows is continuing to hit really well. I mean, like, at some point he's going to come up for Akil Bedu. I think he's a good recommended ad. I think he'll be up sometime in June. Another two stolen bases on Sunday in a game in AAA. James Outman's hitting, you know, the lights out. You can't have all these guys. You got to kind of pick your spots, and it may or may not work out. But I think those are the type of guys. Tyler Black, you figure, has to come out back at some point. Like, they're looking at that roster, I'm not like really seeing a spot, but I don't know. Would it be crazy to? I guess that he wouldn't be traded in a deal for a Mets pitcher, right? I don't really think that would be the. I don't think they'd give up on him, but hey, you never know.
Yeah, you don't know what the cost is. And then, you know, Jordan Walker, you can almost guarantee Victor Scott's even going to have a say at some point this year with the speed aspect. You know, even if it's 2-3 weeks of play, he can go steal you 7-8 bases, and that could be a game changer. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of younger guys that struggled and then get, you know, opportunity call back up. And it's just a matter. I think you've done a great job of staying on top of the minor league stats for guys that have got sent down and available. And that's why you got on Henry Davis when you did, for the price you did. So, like I said, that's really, you know, really great play in there. And it's you're sharing that data too, which is good. Mm-hmm.
And you know what the funny thing with the Henry Davis thing is, yeah, it's going to suck if it doesn't work out and he stinks again, he gets in the minors, and I have to, you know, get these, I almost take it personally, because you start becoming attached to these players. But when somebody's like, oh, Henry Davis, it's, you know, he could only hit in the minor leagues in the preseason and then whatever. So I just can't wait for it to happen. I'd like for it to happen. But can't bank on it. And if it doesn't work out, oh well, we move on, didn't spend too much to get them. But there also is just like these little wins that keep you going throughout the season. And one of those is, you know, getting him week early. You know, that to me is like a psychological win, whether it works out or not. Hey, listen, whatever we tell ourselves, right?
Yeah, for sure. it is. We have to be really careful though about forcing that guy into existence, and I did it with Victor Scott. You know, I was all over him before the season, got excited when he made the team, And he just, I played him a week or two too long. And like we talked about, every little stat matters, and you're playing a guy that's not hitting, it can really drag you down. So you really got to be smart and non-emotional about these roster decisions, lineup decisions, and just play the best player rather than the guy you want to do well.
Yeah, it's so fun. We're getting there. We're not even at the halfway point here coming up. All-Star game is still a month away. We're just getting right into the thick of things. Here comes the main part of the major league season. Just when you have sworn off Corbin Carroll and O'Neill Cruz, they will come back and be the hottest hitters in baseball. This is just kind of the way it works out. That's baseball for you. That's why we do it. That's why we love it.
Yeah, a little late night breaking news, Vlad. Andrés Muñoz got removed from his save situation with a sore lower back. Flared up in a home plate collision. He's going for an MRI. So that is not great. But the Mariners saved George Kirby's win barely. But Muñoz left with two outs in the ninth. So something to brutal. Keep an eye on.
Brutal. I hate to say it, but not as bad as a elbow or shoulder, I guess.
I don't know. There's two fractured backs this year with Devin Williams and Kerry Carpenter. So,
I'd be so toast. Muñoz is my main closer on my two, most important teams. That would suck, but
yeah, but back's better than an elbow or shoulder.
Yeah. All right. Any other last, other players or any interesting guys we should be keeping an eye on this week in 15 or 12 teamers?
Nobody that we haven't really touched on. The only other name is Merrill Kelly, who seems to be ramping up on a positive note. I think his IL stint's up in a couple weeks. So he has been pretty good when he pitched. So might be a name to look at if available in the 15s and even possibly the 12s. Couple other guys, Max Meyer, someone I've been looking to stash because I can't, I think I even mentioned earlier, you can't have five lefties in a rotation. That's just not going to work, Miami. And Max Meyer has not been great in AAA, but he has proven that he is better than AAA. So I think he needs to get called back up. So he's somebody I'm looking at, along with Masataka Yoshida coming back and DHing for the Red Sox. I know I stashed him in one spot this last week, and somebody that really can hit. So hopefully he got healthy and can really get back in there.
Yeah, Yoshida is available in 30% of main events. And of course, make sure you scoop up all the Alec Burleson you can. If you still need a catcher, Corey Lee, he keeps hitting, pick him up. Josh Young, maybe he is a good stash. And by the way, sneaky Brendan Rodgers is hitting in that top third of the lineup and is starting to produce. Even kind of stole his first base of his career a few weeks back after promising us, 30? They promised us he's still 30 bases 3 years ago and didn't even attempt to steal.
I wonder if they took the bag off, your first hit. You take the ball.
Put it in the Hall of Fame. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Really appreciate you all listening. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you.